this is a war between the government and the Tamil people.
I'm not a fucking terrorist. You are the terrorist.
People are crying out for justice in this country.
If you've got to be militant to achieve your aims and your aspirations, so be it.
There's a real hypocrisy from the big corporations.
The people from below will push for real change.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
Good morning. You're listening to Indie Media on RTRFM, coming to you from 92.1 headquarters in our beautiful Borloo. Thank you so much to Jeff for On the Record and my personal favourite voice here at RTRFM. I'm Zoe Theodore, and today in the studio is ecologist and all-round legend Lockie.
Good morning, Zoe.
Good morning, Zoe, and thank you very much for having me.
We'll be hanging out until 12 when Rhiann will be joining you for Out to Lunch.
Today we'll be focusing on conservation, specifically relating to the Row 8 and 9 planning study by the Department of Planning, Lands and Heritage. Keep it locked on RTR to hear from Christine Duckham and Paddy Cullen, who spoke with Zoe last week about the importance of preserving the Coburn Wildlife Corridor.
But first, we will take a moment to hold space and respect for the loss of Cassius Turvey, a 15-year-old boy who was murdered on his way home from school in Middle Swan last week. Perth's Indigenous community are broken after yet another brutal attack of racism. Cassius's mother, Michelle, said, "We all cry. We're heartbroken. This is not supposed to happen to any kid. He is not just my loss. He's everyone's loss, even the people who didn't know him." Balladong Nakinaki woman and chief executive of Pioneers Aboriginal Corporation, Donna Nelson, says, "There needs to be a whole of community conversation around racism. The police in action is making the community feel unsafe." The outrage of Cassius's death has now bled into the broader community of Perth and nationwide, as both Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians share in their outpourings of grief, holding vigils and rallies nationwide.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
The state government is considering potential future land use and zoning opportunities for the western section of the corridor originally reserved for the Roe Highway extension proposal. The East Corridor, which runs from the Belia wetlands to Clontarf Hill, is a deeply loved and environmentally essential path for not only our wildlife and biodiversity, but the mental and physiological benefits they provide for those who utilise them. While the space is now free of a highway, those who fought to protect it did not do so for the sole purpose of preventing Row 8-9. I asked Christine Duckham, environmentalist, activist and trainer, organiser of community events, what exactly the Green Corridor, also known as Coburn Wildlife Corridor, is and the ecological value it provides and why its preservation is so important.
So important. The corridor crosses seven distinct ecological zones. That includes wetlands, paperbark forests, Banksia tuart woodlands, and three different dune systems. And much of that's in really good condition. It contains threatened ecological communities, and I've mentioned those, tuart woodland, coastal Banksia woodlands. They're on the national list of threatened ecological communities. We don't want to lose those. The areas also provide really valuable foraging habitat for endangered species, and we all know about the Carnaby's cockatoos and the red-tailed cockatoos. And there's other flora. There's lots of, and recently, heaps of people have been posting photos of orchids. It seems like everybody's suddenly become aware of our little orchids this spring, and there's a lot in that corridor. There's also lots of reptiles, and there's other birds that are facing local extinction threats as well. As you said, there's significant Aboriginal heritage in the area. There's a registered Aboriginal site, and people can look it up. It's 18322. That includes Clontarf Hill, and what is listed in the City of Coburn local heritage as the Hamilton Hill Swamp Precinct. So that encompasses all of the area that is Dixon Park and the whole of the area that is Clontarf Hill and part of Manning Park as well. The corridor is linked, as you said, in the west to the north-south corridor dune bushland of Manning Park and in the east to Belia Regional Park. So that additional connectivity strengthens biodiversity. It's really valuable urban bushland for passive recreation, and you mentioned human well-being. We all know that access to natural places in our increasingly urbanised southwest area is now well recognised, and it has a positive effect on people's mental and physical health. And the corridor provides easy access to natural spaces for many suburbs across its length. And the local community protested to protect not only Row 8 lands, but also the Row 9 lands. Many people that formed part of that protest live along that wildlife corridor that was or is still the Row 9.
So at the moment, with the open community spaces and Aboriginal sites, what are they utilised for, obviously not only by the ecosystems and our native flora and fauna, but the people within the community who reside there?
Well, there's lots of community land care groups, and we all know that community land care gets people out of their local environment. They experience the benefits of green space, biodiversity, physical activity, connection to other people, and responsibility to community, a really strong sense of purpose and a sense of place. And that is increasingly being lost in our urban environment today. And I think it's really important that people have that sense of place. So our community land care efforts add to what can be achieved by governments. And that includes the Department of Biodiversity, Conservation and Attractions, and also the Department of Water and Environmental Regulation. And our citizen science contributes a whole pile of data and information to the Department of Primary Industries and Regional Development and local government authorities. So participating in land care groups provides heaps of opportunities for people to join in, learn by participating in events that are held, like cleanup days, night stalks, bird counts, and there was a bird count just recently. And we know that the data annually shows a decrease in those bird counts. Also, educational engagement functions that are facilitated by land carers. We do regular hands-on activities, and it's direct education, and it fosters a culture of caring for the community and for the place where people live. And that's not to be undervalued. The Randwick Stables is also a heritage listed site. It's a well-loved port of call for many children in the area, and many visitors go there annually because it contains not only horses but other livestock such as sheep and goats. In terms of Aboriginal heritage, there's increasing opportunities for education about Aboriginal culture and for opportunities for people to learn more. Just recently, the Rehabilitating Row 8 held a session for people to learn Noongar language, for example. And those kinds of opportunities are really, really increasingly important.
With the people that actually live in the area and get to enjoy the area, the residents and conservationists and community, what are the main concerns that they have of any potential development that may come from this study?
Well, I guess the main concerns are that we're going to lose that bushland that I've talked about, and that we're going to see possibly increase in public housing. And in the area of Hamilton Hill, for example, we already have over and above the amount of public housing that is recommended for any one suburb. Our view is that we support public housing completely, but we also feel that it should be distributed across suburbs and not be put in one single area. And we all know that by doing that, it can create social problems that are not easily addressed. And we do have a few issues, and possibly youth centres are needed in the area to address that. We'd be happy to see youth centres created. We're also really concerned about the loss of tree canopy and the possibility of creating more heat island effects. And with climate change, that's a big risk. We're also looking at the possibility of inundation in the future in areas like the Swamp Precinct. If people look at coastalrisk.com, they'll find that that area has a high prediction for flooding in the future, in the near future, in fact. So there are those kinds of future changes that are brought about by climate change that should be looked at very carefully when designing and rezoning this Row 9 corridor.
Does that mean there's any negotiation with the government, or is it best to keep the corridor as undisturbed entirely?
Well, we're asking, and I think the community supports, that any remnant vegetation that exists now not be zoned urban, that it be zoned public open space, and that if in the event that housing is developed, that that plan would accommodate a green corridor to ensure connectivity between those remnant pieces of bushland so that lose the possibility of biodiversity. We all know that species that are left in fragments of bushland don't do well because they're unable to cross-pollinate, say, for flora with other species and increase the biodiversity. And for mammals, for example, leads to the possibility of interbreeding, which is not a good outcome as well.
As you know, the state government is holding the community drop-in sessions. So anyone listening, what can people actually do to help if they do attend or may want to attend?
They can go onto the website, which is facilitated by the Department of Lands, Planning and Heritage, and make a submission with regard to any plan elements that they do agree with or that they don't agree with.
That was Christine Duckham, who spoke with Zoe last week about the environmental, social and cultural values of the Row 8 and 9 Green Corridor, along with the importance of stakeholder engagement. If anyone would like to find out more about Row 8 and 9 Corridor Planning Study, the final drop-in session will be held on Wednesday, November 2nd at Hamilton Hill Memorial Hall between 4 and 8 p.m. More information can also be found by visiting the Department of Planning, Lands and Heritage website and clicking on the Row 8 and 9 link. You're listening to Indie Media with Zoe and Lockie C on RTRFM 92.1.
Today on Indie Media, we have been discussing the potential rezoning for the Row 8-9 corridor. The corridor crosses seven distinct ecological zones, including wetlands, paperbark forests, Banksia woodlands, as well as three dune systems. This environment not only houses hundreds of reptiles and small marsupial species native to WA, but it also is the home to our beloved black cockatoos, which face extinction threats. Paddy Cullen is a prominent environmental activist who has dedicated much of his life to raising awareness for the preservation of these endangered majestic creatures. I started by asking Paddy his thoughts on potentially having to revisit the fight to save our wildlife corridor 5 years after having it stop the highway, despite Labor's promises to protect the corridor.
You never know what's going to happen with the government. You just never know. Things are rarely protected permanently, even when the government says they are protected permanently. So there's always a threat that you're going to have to go back and protect the same area again. It's a difficult thing to have to do that. It can grind you down. The first time we were protesting was about 40 years ago when Farrington Road went in at the back of Murdoch Uni. And then later on in 2017, there was just the most massive, massive groundswell of local community. It was unbelievable. And the civil disobedience was incredible. There were hundreds and hundreds of people sitting in front of bulldozers peacefully, sitting there caring for country, respecting Noongarrbuddja, looking after the trees, looking after the wetlands, looking after this threatened ecological community, this beautiful Banksia woodland. And all of these every day are going under the bulldozer at an alarming rate. And it is the time now when the community will have to get back into action.
Speaking to our cockatoos and red tails, how dire is the situation for them at present?
There's three species of black cockatoos, and all of them are threatened with extinction. There's four habitats in particular that they depend on. For the carnabies, or the nolyanuks, as Noongar people call them, the woodlands are particularly important. So at the moment, they're breeding in the agricultural areas, in the salmon gum and in the wandu, and those woodlands are going down fast. And then for half of the year, they come across to the Banksia woodlands, and those woodlands are going down even faster to housing and to developments. And when you see these new developments, they don't leave a leaf or a stick, and you get absolutely none of the nolyanuks there. So the numbers are in decline, and they've gone down more than 30% in the last 10 years. They're now an endangered species. And their cousin, which also sometimes comes to this area, which is like the nolyanuk, like the carnaby, but slightly longer beak, called the nolak or the bowdens, that's just been upgraded to critically endangered internationally. So the government at one time did have a plan called a green growth plan for the Perth Peel area. It was issued by the federal government that they should put in this plan. They spent $7 million on this plan. Other cities were also given the job of putting in place green growth plans, and they did that quickly within a year. For some reason, in Perth, we spent $7 million developing this plan, and this year we threw it out. And they said because it makes it too difficult for developers to streamline their housing projects. So we've cast nature aside in favour of developers.
What habitat do the birds require at a bare minimum to avoid this dire extinction? And how is it provided within the woodlands and parks in the city of Cockburn, particularly within this green corridor?
Yeah. Well, Cockburn is particularly important. It's one of the last areas where you have this east-west connection, which the birds need. They will not fly over areas that are not green. So they need these east-west connections. And it connects a whole range of reserves and wetlands together. And when you look at the nolyanuks, what they need water, they need roosting trees, they need food trees, and you have all that in a close facility along this green corridor. It's actually a lifeline for these birds. And when you look at the pressures that they're under, including the loss of forests, the loss of the wheat belt woodlands, the loss of the Banksia woodlands, and also the loss of a pine plantation now in the north of Perth, where more than half of the nollinucks or carnabies are so desperate for food, they've lost so much habitat that they're now relying on these pine cones. That's also going down. So the pressures are on them at every single side. We cannot keep cutting into their habitat. Instead, we have to do the reverse. We have to restore it and we have to expand it. And we have a fantastic community example of that happening here in this corridor. Hundreds of people have got up and planted trees and decided to make the world a more beautiful place instead of a more desolate place. And this is an example that the government should hold up to the rest of the community. Instead of knocking back this corridor, they should be putting in more rivers of green all over Perth. This is a global biodiversity hotspot. It's an area of 2% of the Earth's surface where you find 50% of the world's species. But our species are going faster than nearly anywhere else in the world. We've got one of the highest extinction rates in the world, one of the highest deforestation rates in the world. And we must turn that around. Recently, Tanya Plibersek, the federal minister, said we are going for a target of zero extinctions and we are going to get 30% of our land area by 2030 into natural protected habitat areas. This is a United Nations agreement that the world has come together and said we have to face this problem. Now it's the responsibility of the government to follow through and start restoring and expanding and not chipping away at that habitat.
So what impact would any disruption, so that's speaking to just houses, birds live among houses, but what impact does that have on these cockatoos?
Well, when you put in housing projects, it normally involves bringing in bulldozers, and our developers like to start with like a clean sheet of paper. They will not leave anything. And there's been some studies by Murdoch University that show when the housing projects go in, the cockatoos go out. They've tagged them and they found you get zero black cockatoos in the new housing areas. So they're absolutely a killer for these birds. They're an absolute killer and they can't take too much more. Scientists have said in the next 20 years, we're going to face what they call the extinction canyon. That means mass extinction on a huge level. We must change the way we do things. We must go back to the care for country model, the way of living with nature, which is better for our own mentality and better for our own health and better for nature. And it's something that this part of the world, it's so special. It's the most special thing we've got.
Including everything you've just said, in what ways can the state government, as well as the city of Cockburn, work in a more sustainable and biophilic manner to prevent all this?
Well, first of all, what we need to see is this green growth plan come back. And it has to be a proper green growth plan. We have areas identified which are called Bush Forever areas, but that's in name only. So those areas need to be put into A-class reserves. And then they need to look at the linkages between these reserves and put in corridors like this corridor to link up all these beautiful areas into what some scientists call regional parks. And we have some examples of that in the Perth area already. So then you build up these regional parks till they connect to each other. And you could have a city where you could walk through the bush from the waves to the hills to the Bibbulmun track, north, south, east, west. It would be a place of remarkable beauty and it would be a place of incredible culture to showcase the Noongar culture and the ways that Noongar people lived and still live and care for this land. So we've got a great opportunity to do something absolutely incredible, but we have to rethink ourselves, not look at nature as something that we just use up like a drink of coffee and then throw the cup away, but think of ourselves as part of that, part of nature, and what we do to nature, we do to ourselves. And if we look after it, it will look after us. And this is the best thing we can do for our children to leave this incredible legacy. We've got a film coming out on November the 23rd. It's going to be at the Luna in Leederville. It will probably run for a couple of weeks. And it's by an extraordinary filmmaker. She's won so many international awards. Her name is Jane Hammond. She's from Fremantle. Her last film, Cry of the Forest, was instrumental in stopping the logging of native forests. And WA is becoming the first state to stop logging in native forests. So we know if that is because people got active. They saw the film, they got active. So this time we want people to see the film again and get active and save all those habitats that are so precious to black cockatoos. And we can do it, and we've shown we can do it. So we need people to stand up and get active once more.
That was Paddy Cullen speaking about the impact that any destruction of the wildlife corridor will have on the black cockatoos and why its development could be a death sentence for the critically endangered species. The world premiere of Black Cockatoo Crisis by activist filmmaker Jane Hammond will premiere at Luna Cinema on Wednesday the 23rd of November. We will pop a link to secure your tickets on our Facebook page, but you can also follow along by searching Black Cockatoo Crisis.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
Jumping back into our topic of the DPLH study of Roe 89, we look into the political aspects, and if there is to be a redevelopment, what protections could be put in place? While a great portion of the corridor is its green open spaces and bushland, it is also yielding affordable housing for residential tenants who appreciate the value in which these government assets provide, not only for their homes, but the preservation of native fauna that depend on it. This also includes Randwick Stables, a heritage-listed site for which the surrounding bushland and open field of Dixon Park is essential. I spoke to Peter Tinley specifically regarding these concerns and if the state government will advocate for its preservation.
It's 100 hectares of space between Stock Road and Rockingham Road, roughly, where Rockingham Road intersects Hampton Road. And everybody's driven past it for years and years, and it's just been vacant land or partially occupied by people who are leaseholders with the Main Roads Department. And now that 100 hectares, we get to contemplate it, what it might look like without a road on it, and converted to multiple different uses. What's been very interesting is the community that we've been consulting with for the last couple of weeks have all got a fairly diverse range of views. The only common piece between everyone's desire for that 100 hectares has been access to passive bush and open spaces as required in different spots. They're not adverse to development, a certain amount of residential development, because we also know if we want to preserve the way of life that people have come to enjoy around here and remove the opportunity for any future government to build the road again, we need to do a certain amount of private development. So that's part of it. The Carrington Road, Rockingham Road intersection here, where we are situated in this community consultation morning, is a particularly interesting one. It's all owned by Main Roads. All the shops are leased by Main Roads. And it's the city of Coburn who will inherit the land, if you like, when it is excised from the MRS. They're potentially looking at revamping this as a commercial centre. So that will be increase and improve the amenity for people in the area, particularly if it's a if it has a good retail offering. So there's a very exciting period of time. There's a lot of tension in the community, I'll absolutely admit that, about uncertainty of what's coming. And that's why as a local member, along with a member for Coburn, David Scaife, and Simone McGurk, member for Fremantle, we need to be very clear about what the community is needing and wanting for this area.
Cardigan Street, Healing Road, that are Main Roads houses. Provide affordable housing. The value of that land obviously is quite high. do you foresee in being able to keep that land as main roads, or if it's inherited, and enabling it to stay as it is and like facilitate that affordable housing?
So the Cardigan Street area, the Dixon Road area, all that end of it is a complex piece of land in terms of there's Aboriginal heritage, and there's part of an Aboriginal sacred site there as well, and some very sensitive areas around that area. And of course there are those houses that you mentioned where people are enjoying a quality of life that they might not be able to afford.
Yeah, because there is obviously Rainbow Stables, which is near their curtilage. And it also the Dixon Park and encroaching into Clontarf Hill, but just that space in between, if it were to be like sold privately, could there be any caveats around that would keep it either affordable or maintaining the bushland that is on those blocks?
I can't give any guarantees.
Yeah.
But that's to say, I don't think anybody has the ambition to just flip housing for value. Certainly not the McGowan Labor government's view. We're very much supporter. As a former Minister for Housing myself, I completely understand the need for affordable housing, particularly in this day and age. So in the very near term, in the next few years, I can't see anything happening there. But I have taken on board those particular residents' concerns when they approached us, and I will be advocating for them to retain those as rentals. And because the other thing in the whole Fremantle district, if you want to, and Coburn district, is becoming harder and harder for people to, artists, for example, who make a great contribution to the community, to have fine accommodation in the community. So that's something we're acutely aware of. So as a local member, I certainly would be advocating for it.
With this all considered, you personally, what would you like to see?
Oh, I'm very clear. What I want to see is no potential whatsoever for a future road or a serious road developed by a future government. I want to see that the community of Hamilton Hill has access to passive bush and that the wildlife and flora and fauna of the area that we fought so hard for to protect in the Bealeah wetlands also has the same opportunities out through this way. I really do believe, though, talking to all the groups and people who have got a lot more expertise than me, that we can integrate both the built form and the natural form and enhance what we've already got. There's lots of areas that are very low, what you would call very low environmental value, because as you know, they're just dirt.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean they can't be rehabilitated if that's possible as well. So there's a bit of work to go. There's a long way to go in relation to how that's integrated, but I think the best thing that saves places like this in the wetlands is their use. When they're used, they're loved, and once they're loved, nobody would ever contemplate for a moment that we would develop Kings Park, because everybody's got a personal relationship with Kings Park. We need a personal relationship with this sort of area as well, by the local residents.
That was Peter Tinley, who spoke with Zoe at a community consultation forum late last week. You're listening to Indie Media on RTRFM 92.1. As mentioned earlier in the broadcast, more information on this planning study can be found by visiting the Department of Planning, Lands and Heritage website and clicking on the Row 8 and 9 link. At this link, the draft plan for the rezoning can be viewed. It is important to note that this plan is not currently binding and subject to change based on the informed and emotive feedback from people. Anyone can submit feedback via the consultation hub, which can be found on the same webpage. Submissions close on Friday, the 25th of November, so be sure to get your feedback in before then.
Lockie, I think that's getting close to all we have time for today. Rhiann is here with her Mary Poppins bag of new music and tunes to get you in the mood for the week. If you would like to restream today's show, you can do so via the RTR website or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Indie Media Podcast, first broadcast on RTRFM 92.1.